What's up, everybody? I am Jesse from Plant the Spear. Excited to be back in the studio with you guys. Thank you for tuning in. We're getting ready to talk about Florida State and their handling of the Hokies at home this past Saturday, getting ready to make some fresh squeezed orange juice out of Syracuse on Saturday. And we got a lot to talk about in between there. Of course, you know we're going to make fun of Miami for that debacle in South Florida. So we got to hit on some of those points. So you guys stay tuned for that. Before we get into things, I have some exciting news to share with you guys. You've probably seen it on social media so far, where we're trying to take Plant the Spear to the next level. And most of you guys know I operate as a one-man organization, and sometimes it gets hard to keep up. And our audience is growing, and we're trying to bring you the best content possible. So we are going to bring in a new member to the Plant the Spear family, and I am excited to introduce you guys to Michael Hinton, who is going to be joining the team at Plant the Spear. We actually had a chance to catch up at the Virginia Tech game, got to meet for a little bit, and I just immediately knew when talking to him about Florida State, just seeing some of the things that he's written, I knew this was a perfect fit for the Plant the Spear family. So really excited to have him as a part of the team. If you guys haven't checked it out yet, he wrote a post-game wrap for the Virginia Tech game, and I'm going to have to step my game up because he is killing it already. So welcome to the family, Michael. Let the people know a little bit about yourself and what you're excited to be a part of this for.
Well, thanks, Jesse. First and foremost, man, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to join one of the best fan sites that's covering authentic Florida State football team and news and everything. And so I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be able to join your team and just give back to the school and the football team that we love. And I'm an original Floridian, born and raised right here in Florida. Grew up here, and just, you know, I've been cheering for the Noles ever since I can remember when I was little, you know, hating on those Hurricanes and Turds or the Gators, whatever you want to refer to those, that dump of a city. And just can't stand them, but, you know, love my Noles and went to college for communications and moved back from California to, I live right here in Orlando. So I'm at Doak every time that gate's open, I'm there. So, but grateful for the opportunity to be a part of Plant the Spear, and let's go, man.
Excellent. Excellent. I love it. And as you guys see, it's going to be a great fit because, you know, I try and be respectful and nice on this, but when it comes to Miami and Florida, it's no holds barred. We're going to make fun of them every chance we get. So
that's right.
just excited to have Michael to help bring our coverage to the next level. Like I said, we're going to be doing YouTube podcasting. We're going to be doing some new articles on the site. So we're really going to get this thing going. He's going to be a crucial part of that. So Michael, it's Sunday morning. I'm waking up. It's 50 degrees outside. We got some nice fall weather coming in. Florida State still undefeated, just coming off a win in front of a sold out crowd at Doak Campbell Stadium. And then you got Miami got embarrassed on national TV.
Oh my
What a weekend. What a great weekend to be an FSU fan.
Let me tell you, listen, to wake up, you know, Sunday morning and to find out that that program down south that claims to be back since it's been 20 years and they're still not back has the audacity to talk trash after your head coach literally with the game won decides to run the ball. You have nothing else to say this season. I don't want to hear a word from you.
Exactly. We heard all that talk about Boston College and this, that, the other. And I had actually just got back to the hotel and you had texted me like, have you seen the Miami game? And I turned it on. I'm like, yes, like I relish in their pain every chance I get.
Bro, I was driving home, you know, because after we hung out, I was driving home back to Orlando, 4-hour drive, and I have the game on my car, and I'm like, this is not happening. And as soon as he threw that just beautiful pass, right, that just comes over and he hits it, a touchdown, I almost wrecked the car. I had to pull off to the side of the road to just have a moment of sheer joy. Just joy.
Oh man. And that's awesome because I don't know a lot of Miami fans because there's just not a lot of them in existence, but it's so funny because just, you know, the way it's the same cycle every year. It's we're back and you know, it's the All Canes conference and this, that, and the other. And then they just completely embarrass themselves every year. So that is so much fun. And we'll have a chance to kind of dig on them a little bit more coming up, but You know, speaking of it being 50 degrees out, it was cold. Now, when I got back to Charlotte, it was 40 degrees the next morning. So with that being said, guys, I stopped by our sponsor, Alumni Hall, and I got some of that new Heritage Collection gear. Thank goodness I picked up a hoodie because it's cold up here. And yes, I love that new Heritage Collection gear. It looks really good. The blue took a little bit to grow on me, but if you guys want to get your hands on some of that gear and get it at a great price, check out alumnihall.com, or they have a location in Tallahassee. You know, we got two more home games coming up this month.
Right.
Stop by there, 1817 Thomasville Road. Tell them I sent you. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off your order. So when we talk about Virginia Tech and the win that Florida State got on Saturday in Doak Campbell Stadium, 39-17, I originally had a score prediction of 45-17. So this is pretty in line with where I expected. I just think when you talk about Florida State this season, I think when you look back to 2022, they came out outside of Oklahoma and Florida, and they just wiped the mat with everybody. I think that's what we thought it was going to look like this year, and it just hasn't. It doesn't always look like what you want it to, but they get the job done, and really that's all that matters. I think there was some positives in this game. I mean, Florida State's 5-0. They're on an 11-game win streak. They're number 4 in the AP poll. It's kind of hard to be mad, but it doesn't always look like what you want it to. But at the end of the day, they have some insane hot and cold stretches. Yeah. But I do think we saw a hot start in this one. That's something that we had not seen. They went up 22-0 in the first quarter. That's what I really wanted to see. So I think at least this week you got 3/4 of good play instead of 1/2 of good play. So that's better. You know, we had been saying you only get 1/2 of good play. Now you got 3/4. So maybe they can do 4. They just got to keep working on that. So overall, some of the thoughts, we'll just kind of go back and forth on this game and just give me some of your initial thoughts on how this game looked, how you felt it was going to go before kickoff, and did it meet expectations throughout the game?
So as you know, for those of you watching, as you get to know me, at the end of the day, a W is a W is a W is a W, right? You remember the days when we just clamored to be sitting in a space where we were talking about the Noles being 5-0, right? We were just hoping they would be, like, you know, bowl eligible for a few seasons there, which is crazy to think about in Florida State history. So to me, a win's a win. So I don't get so high or low based on, like, beauty points. I know that matters for the stupid AP polls and the coaches that barely even watch the games and they're ranking people. Preseason polls, those polls really don't matter to me. It's really the college football playoffs. That's when I start to get, like, highs and lows. So to me, before the game, I was just really hoping, like, okay, let's just show up and let's just look better than we did the last two weekends. Let's not have a repeat of Boston College. That was really my biggest goal, that if we got up, that we started dominating, that we would finish, right? Mike Norvell talks about that a lot, that we would just finish. And when adversity hits, because it hits every game, that we would respond a lot better. Because if you go back, Jesse, to that Boston College game, let's just be real. Let's just call a spade a spade. They lucked into that win. If it wasn't for that face mask, there's a likelihood we lose that game, right? So they didn't really respond like Mike Norvell likes. But what I thought that I saw was, yes, we went into that second quarter. It was atrocious, but they responded, right, after that kickoff return. So I was great with that. Man, I love that the run game got back. Like, thank goodness. Like, Trey looked. I'm so glad that Dalvin Cook texted him, because it was looking a little sketch there. But no, he ran hard. You know, Mike Norvell, you know, he talked about, and I think you saw this, he talked about how in the bye week that they do self-scouting. They do it throughout the year, but they especially do it during the bye week. And they self-scouted that, you know, some of the run game schemes they were using, obviously, you know, their opponents had all summer to study counter, you know, that they use with when they pull the guard and they pull the tackle or they pull the tight end. And so they came out, what I was very surprised that they came out and they changed some of those schemes. They still ran counter, but they ran a different kind of scheme where they pulled the guard only. It's called, like, down or pin and pull, I guess you want to call it. And it actually opened up holes. And then they just got healthier on the offensive line. We saw Darius Washington in. That was super helpful to get the run game going. And then Trey, what I thought was the biggest difference, Jesse, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, is Trey wasn't trying to dance. Mm-hmm. He hit the hole. He made the cut, one hit, and he was gone. I think earlier in the season, he was trying to dance so much that I think that was going. I'd love to know what you were thinking about that as well.
Yeah, and I do agree. And, you know, when you talk about the run game in this one, I do think a lot of it was you knew Virginia Tech was terrible at stopping the run. So this was the game that if they were going to get things going, we know they ran for over 200 yards in 8 games last year. So it's not that they don't have effective game planning. It's just it's execution. And
correct.
I think when you look at Virginia Tech and a terrible run defense, they gave up over 200 yards to Old Dominion. You knew this was a possibility to hit those numbers. And you did that. You did what you were supposed to do. I think they also schemed some things up. And that's something that I talked about last week was we saw how they came out of the bye week last year. And I was hoping to see them, like you said, self-scout and reevaluate and make the adjustments that they need going forward. I think you saw them spread Virginia Tech out and run out of a very wide formation, which created better looks. I think you also saw them. One thing that really stood out to me, especially in the first quarter, was the tempo. They really pushed the tempo, and I felt like they had Virginia Tech on their heels. Yeah. And so I think that was huge. Robert Scott came back and played in this game. Now, you know, they like to bring him along, so it's they didn't really – he didn't get a heavy workload. But I think you knew you could win this game without him, but I think that it's nice to see them back because, I mean, like you said, it's really just about getting healthy on the offensive line.
Yep.
And the more injuries you have to deal with, the less chance you have to get those guys to mesh. And so I think it's just offensive line is such a cohesive position.
Right.
So I do think it was – I think you saw a lot of what you wanted to see in this game because I do think Virginia Tech was a little better than what their record lets on.
Yes.
I think they have some players. If we're being honest, I think the spread was a little bit high to begin with just because we haven't seen Florida State really blow out a lot of teams.
Right.
I think that was a little bit high, but I also think when you look at the game as a whole, the kickoff return was very fluky. That's not something that's going to happen every week. Defense had a great game. The blown calls affected the outcome of the game. This one realistically should have been about 46-10, and we'll talk about the refs too. So just any other thoughts you have on that? Because the refs, man, like we know what to expect from ACC refs, but this year has been just terrible because I know we like to say it's FSU, but like Dabo was all up in a ref's tail on Saturday. And then, you know, I'm not going to say they blew it because it works great for me, but they kind of blew the call in the Miami game, whether he was down or not.
So, did.
It's just, we've just been like, it seems like it's been really, really, really bad officiating this year. And it cost FSU points in this game.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, so, you know, if we're talking about the point and the spread, right? I mean, FSU missed the cover by, I think, like 2 or 3 points or whatever it was. So it wasn't too bad. But I'm not, Jesse, a guy that as like a tinfoil, there's a conspiracy theory. You know, FSU came out this summer and, you know, basically said one guy. So all the, you know, all the ACC has told the refs secretly to screw FSU. I'm not that. I've seen some of that on social media. I'm not that. But I will say, in my years, I'm 38 years old. I've been watching the Noles for, you know, 30 years, basically, man, these calls feel very slanted. I can understand how people feel like FSU gets the job by referees. I mean, let's just briefly talk about this. FSU's 22-0, right? They literally just had a really legal sound hit on the quarterback. I mean, Adam Fuller said in his post game that that's the way they teach it and they will continue to teach it. Yep. I appreciated that he stood up for himself. And then, you know, I mean, Azari Thomas had literally one of the best interceptions we've seen this season. I mean, the toe touch, the precision of that, the whole thing. FSU gets that interception. You know, they're going to go down and score. It gets 29-0. And let's just be real. Virginia Tech likely 99% likely quits. And now we're looking at a 60 burger, right? Where FSU is probably going to put up 60 points and it's just going to be a blowout. But they call that roughing the passer, which was, it was absolutely asinine call. And then they call, there's like another personal foul. There's a holding, I believe, on the defense. And then they go down and they score. And now you got a game and you're like, what the, The job of the officials, because I used to be a high school football official. Now, this is not college, but it's high school. So, but it's the same mentality. The job is that we are unknown, right? Right. The job is that the officials are unknown. Officiate the game that's in front of you, not the game you think is in front of you.
Right.
And I think every time the officials, when they officiate Florida State, especially ACC refs, they're all they do a lot, I would say a lot of assumption flags. They assume this was going to happen, so they throw the flag. And I would just say this too before I throw it back to you is that, you know, I think part of this is on the NCAA because the mandate from the NCAA has been if there's a doubt of the call, throw the flag. That's been their mentality. So for the last 5 years, these refs have been told, if you have any doubts, just throw the flag, right? And replay for like targeting, especially, will fix it. Right. But on these calls that there are no replay for, you're literally screwing these teams. And so it's just so frustrating to watch this happen over and over again. But at the end of the day, right, you have to play the officials. You have to play the game that's in front of you. And I will say this. This is probably one of the first times I've seen Mike Norvell insanely ticked off.
Oh, man. Those pictures that came out where he was on the sideline, I mean, he was tearing them a new one. He's been fierce this year, but it was to a new level. And I really – like, I do think it was – warranted, and I think they should hopefully. I'm sure they're going to send that tape into the conference. Yeah. I'm looking. Of course, it doesn't mean anything now.
No.
But you know, and I think when you look at the late hit, I heard some people say that it was because he landed with his whole body. But you're talking about a guy that's the size of him. How you can't stop on a dime. And I think another interesting point too is when you look at Drones, their quarterback. He's a dual threat guy. That's someone who can pump it and go. In a moment's notice. So if you pull up and he pumps and goes, now you could have just given up a play. So you have to stay aggressive. So to me, it's gotten over the top with the way they protect. I mean, I know it's football and you want to protect guys. I get that. But at the same time, like you said, refs should be unknown. They should not have an effect on the outcome of the game.
Correct.
And it just seems like I'm not really conspiracy theorist either. I don't think the ACC likes Florida State. That's just me personally. Because we came in and we dunked on all their North Carolina schools for a really long time. But I do feel like it's just been really bad this year. But, you know, one of the worst games was the LSU game. And it wasn't even – that was a Big 12 crew. You know, now, I mean, you can say what you want about the head ref's brother being in the flyover. That seems like a conflict of interest. But, you know – that's neither here nor there. Right. That's neither here nor there. But, you know, then you also look at the call that they missed, the PI on Ja'Kai Douglas. There's probably, like, first off, if it wasn't a 60-yard gain, you're not catching Ja'Kai Douglas. So, like, he literally grabbed him by the shoulder and drug him to the ground. That was a touchdown. So you're talking about even if Virginia Tech stays in the fight and they don't fold tent, you're talking about at least a 14-point swing here where they go down and score and you could have held them out and then you got robbed of 7 points potentially with the blown call on Ja'Kai Douglas. So it's just unfortunate where Florida State, I mean, I think they did what they needed to do, but they did need the style points in this win. I think 39-17 is fine. You won by multiple scores at home. I just think, like, if you had seen that game go 46-10, it probably would have looked a little better down the line on your resume because something we talked about on the last episode, there's a very good chance you're going to have a log jam at the end of the year for the playoff spots with some of the teams, depending on how things play out. So it's just been bad this year, and it's frustrating to watch. Hopefully it doesn't end up costing Florida State in a game. Not to spend too much time on the refs because, you know, we could literally do a whole episode on the
but
this one really did have an outcome, effect on the outcome of the game. And that's not even talking about the little missed holding calls that you saw here and there that, and I love that all these photographers have been putting pictures out after the game.
Oh man.
It's clear and obvious. What do you say?
What do you do? I mean, I saw one. Okay. So the last thing I'll say about the refs here, to your point about the pictures that have been coming out is there was one, you know, the play where the running back, I can't think of his name right now, but he catches the ball out of the backfield. The ball is clearly on the ground.
Yeah.
Now this is a play that replay official actually has the power to stop the game, to replay this, to review it, and to see clearly that the ball was on the ground. I was in the stadium sitting in section 28. I was 20 rows up, and I could clearly see the plays on the other side of the field from me, on the visitor side. I could clearly see the ball touch the ground. How do we not stop the game to review that play? Because that was on their touch drive. That would have been a three and out. That's the thing.
Right. Yep.
That's what drives me nuts. It's stuff like that.
Right. And then I think that, you know, and really the thing about the refs, and the last thing I'll say on that is I understand that when you look at some of these things, it's the automatic answer is always don't let the game be close enough that the refs can affect it, but they can affect the outcome. And really the reason I think that it is important is when you talk about it could potentially cost you a game here and there. It's not just like, oh, you lost a game. I mean, there's jobs at stake. There's livelihoods at stake. There's a lot of money when you talk about playoff, you know, the prizes that they get for that and things like that. So it really is huge when you talk about the outcome that they can change, the ripple effect from one or two bad calls. And then when they start to stack up. But, you know, the good thing is, I will say about Florida State, they've had to beat the refs in just about every game other than Boston College, who, God knows, they couldn't run two plays without committing a penalty.
That's but probably so, the one game where they actually, like, were on our side.
Right. Like, so you've beat two teams basically in every game. So if you can ever get a fairly called game, I feel like they're going to do great. So just kind of putting a little bit of a bow on this one here, we'll talk about a couple things. I do think this team is just, man, they're so full of hot and cold stretches. When you talk about the first quarter, Florida State had 198 yards to 9 for Virginia Tech. In the second quarter, it was 126 for Virginia Tech and 1 yard for Florida State. You know, we've seen the run, the 31-point run in LSU. You saw the run in Boston College where they let them come back. I really do think that people just have to realize this is what this team is at this point. I mean, we're 5 games into the season, getting ready for game 6. You can only say, I hope they get this cleaned up so much before it just becomes their identity. And it doesn't mean you still can't be successful. Look at 2014 is a great example where they kind of played with their food almost every game and they were able to win those games. And of course we talked about this off air about, you want to see them peak at the right time. And I think that they are progressively putting more and more together. And people do have to realize that there was a lot of new pieces on this team. They have to get, it takes time to get in sync when you talk about bringing in portal guys. That's one of the downsides of it. But I think this team is just, it's who they are now. But as long as they can still do enough to keep winning the games, that I feel like they're going to be fine. It's just they heard, oh, we got Keon Coleman. Oh, you know, Johnny Wilson ended the season with a 200-yard game, and they're going to come out next year with a top-5 offense and beat everybody 60-0. It's just not the case. But like you said in the beginning, you have to appreciate them being where they're at and being able to not play great and still win. I mean, I always tell people, like, I sat row one behind Jacksonville State's bench during the Hail Mary game. So, like, I have just prayed for a win, any win. Like, now you're just hoping that they win by 30 or 40 points. So I do think you have to stop and smell the roses a little bit. It's not always going to be pretty. But when you look at the national picture, really nobody has – there's no juggernaut out there. There's no one who's really just mowing everybody over. So as long as they get the wins and they, you know, you don't want to have another Boston College type of situation, but maybe you don't win by 30 in every game, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah. And what I would say to that is, I absolutely agree with you. You know, obviously, like I said, a win's a win's a win's a win, right? At the end of the day, it's all about the win. I also want to acknowledge our fans out there who are like, no, we got to be winning more. This offense is supposed to be juggernaut. I get that. I get that idea when all summer you were told about this. You know, I mean, we saw what happened last season, right? They end up winning the last, 6 games, and they're scoring out of the wazoo. I mean, Florida was one of the best defenses in the country last year, even though their offense was terrible, but they were one of the best defenses. I mean, we put up 30 something points on that game. We're scoring on all these other teams. So yeah, I get that. Like, we added more pieces into that already prolific offense, so it should be looking like much better. But the thing we said, like you said off air, is Mike Norvell has always said since the day one he's gotten here that he wants this team to be peaking in November, because our most important games are happening typically in November, right? Miami in late October, and then Florida at the end of the year, right? Because let's be real. We could have a dynamic offense in September. But if we lose Miami and we lose Florida, no one's going to care about that, nope. Right? They're going to care, why did we lose those games? And so I've been on board with this, that, yeah, it's not going to look great. Of course, I would love for them to win every game by 90, honestly. But I know that as they're building, Mike Norvell has proven every single year that he's been here that, man, they actually get – I mean, let's just go back to the COVID season, right? They started terrible. They looked good towards the end of the year. Let's go back to 2021. I was at the Notre Dame game, flew all the way over across the country from California, and it was a heartbreaker. And then they went 0-4. And then he had a press conference where he like lit a fire. And then what? They go 5-3 the next year, right? They start 4-0 last year. They had that slump of the three-game losing streak to Clemson, Wake Forest, and NC State. And then what did they do? Man, they look like world beaters at the end of the year. This year, they're starting 5-0. Let's just remember they started 5-0 and they're actually getting better. They had the little clunker against Boston College, but they're getting better. So yes, we should challenge. We say, man, we want to see this offense, but also let's do that with the mindset of typically Mike Norvell teams get better as the year go on. Remember, this team was built by storm, right? Yeah. Dude, they're winning the fourth quarter. They have not lost a, with the exception of Boston College, they have not technically lost a fourth quarter. And so I think that's what I kind of keep in mind as I'm looking at this offense, especially, and even the defense. I mean, the defense, one of the things I'll say about this, to toss it back to you, is what I've loved, and I'd love your thoughts on this too, is I've loved just like, okay, they'll have the lull, they'll have the adjustments they make, but they'll literally go in the half and then they'll come out and you're like, holy cow. Like when we talk about second half adjustments, that's a Mike Norvell team. That's Adam Fuller defense. They're making those adjustments. They're seeing how teams are playing them. And then they come out with I think Clemson is the best example of this, right? They were playing this kind of off coverage. You know, Clemson was just hitting them with quick passes, quick slants. You know, we're all screaming at our TV, why aren't you being more aggressive? What do? Come out second half, and I mean, they're blitzing like their hair's on fire, but not even just blitzing, because it's not all about blitzing. They're being more aggressive on the corners. They're playing up the receivers. They're bumping hard.
But, you know, I do think you bring up a good point, because if you didn't have that, the adjustments, then people would be, like, say you started fast and then they just kind of let teams come back in the second half. People would be complaining because they didn't make adjustments. So people are always going to find something to complain about. I just really think that the other thing is this year, I think Florida State knows that it's a long season. And we've seen them rotate a lot more in the first half. I think they're setting things up. And this is something Adam Fuller has talked about. They're setting things up for the second half.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those where it's like, you're going to give up a few things early, so you set things up late, because it's more important to, as long as you stay, like if you can get to halftime, like the LSU game, and it's technically 0-0, as long as you win the second half, you win the game, and that's what matters. And so like Mike Norvell said, they looked at all the national championship teams and how they rotate their defensive line, and they're trying to model that now this year. So you may give up some things a little bit in the first half, but you're going to come on strong in the second half. And I do think one thing that people also have to realize about this year too is something that really kind of was, I didn't think it was as much to the degree that it was last year. I knew there were some teams with new coaches. And of course, you don't play some of the teams again this year, but six of the teams Florida State played last year were year one under a new staff, which means new coach, new defensive coordinator.
Correct.
So Florida State was one of those where for a long time, they didn't get the benefit of the experience. They didn't get that continuity of the staff. And I think when you look at last year, that's something that they had versus a lot of the other teams. Now, the three teams that they lost to, Clemson, NC State, and Wake Forest, if most people remember when I did a midseason review, I actually broke it down all the way to snap counts to see how the experience adds up. And those teams had far more experience than Florida State as a combined roster. So I think it's just this year you're seeing teams that are more comfortable in their scheme. You're seeing teams that are better prepared for Florida State. They're not so much trying to figure themselves out now. They're trying to figure out opponents. So I do think that has something to do with it as well. And I also think that the schedule's front loaded. Like, let's wait and see. And this is something that's really going to stand out when we talk about Syracuse here in a minute. when you look at the front half of the schedule and what Florida State has done playing at a team like LSU, who I know their defense doesn't look great, but that's still a great offensive team there. Clemson still has an elite level defense. When you talk about what they've had to do, the Boston College game, of course, it was ugly. But I think when you talk about the flu being around the locker room and the red bandana game and things like that, I think that's an anomaly.
Yep.
But I think it's just let them have a few games against a Syracuse and against a Virginia Tech. Let them play North Alabama. Then right. We'll talk about the stats and how it looks, because a lot of teams have really feasted on just poor competition. And that's absolutely not something Florida State has had the benefit of.
Absolutely. I mean, like, let's just be real. Like, this is one of the things that bothers me in the national conversation about Florida State. Is everybody wants to dog on Florida State because we haven't had the beauty points. We struggle against Boston College. You know, they thought we should have, you know, done more against Clemson or whatever. Florida State is the only Power Five school in the country with the best set of wins this season. Okay. Let's just look at the top 10. Okay. I don't have it in front of me, but who is Georgia's best win?
Kentucky.
Okay. Who is Michigan's best win? The lady of the poor school? Nobody.
Yeah. Nobody.
Who is Ohio State's best win? A Notre Dame team that now has two losses?
They won literally on the last play of the game.
Correct. Thank you very much. Against Duke. Now, Duke is better this year, but it's still Duke, right?
Right.
USC, who have they beaten? Nobody. And please don't get me started with Colorado. They are not worthy of top 25. I don't know why they were ever ranked in the first place, right? I mean, you look at these schools, Texas best win. Now, Texas did have a really good win. They went on the road. They went into Alabama. That's a great win. But outside of that, I mean, you just saw what happened this weekend. Their defense, right. Oklahoma put it on them, right? Yep. And so really, if you look at these top, let's go 7, 5, 6 schools or whatever, you look at the top schools, no one has a better collection of wins than Florida State does. Now, yes, LSU lost to Ole Miss and a barn burner. But, I mean, let's be real. You know, everybody's scoring on everybody these days, right? Yeah. But they came back next weekend and beat Missouri on the road. That's a good LSU team, regardless of what everyone wants to believe. That's a good LSU team. And let's just be real. Clemson is better than what their record says they are. They were literally in the red zone 5 times. If they do not turn the ball over, they win that game in a blowout against Duke. Clemson was better.
A lot of what led to them losing that game, and of course Duke is better, like we talked about. A lot of what led to them losing that game was on themselves. And
right.
They will get a chance. I mean, they've got Notre Dame coming up. I believe they also play UNC this year. They got Miami. So they have a chance to really show something. Now, Cade Klubnik has to stop turning the ball over. That's true. That is number one. But, and I said this last week too, I feel like Florida State was punished 2 weeks in a row for that Boston College game.
Yep.
That Clemson game was going to be close. They were a 2.5-point favorite in a place where it's almost impossible to win. That game was going to be close regardless. And so now I think when it was, you saw the Boston College game, everybody went, oh, well, that's 2 close wins in a row.
Right.
And the Clemson game was going to be close regardless. So it's just, I mean, they haven't lost an ACC game there since 2016. The losses that they have had been really close. And I think people really undervalue that win. People who haven't had to go there and beat that team in Death Valley. Because, and this was a comparison that I made too on a previous show, where if you put Duke back in that same situation that Florida State was in, a Saturday, sold out Death Valley, Clemson's had a few weeks to kind of figure some things out, I wouldn't put a single dollar that Duke wins that game the second time around. I wouldn't put a dollar on half the teams in the top 25 going in there and beating Clemson, because they're just a better team than people give them credit for. And then, like you said, when you talk about the resume, LSU, they took another loss, but they were able to bounce back with a ranked win against Missouri. And then I got to give Georgia a little bit of credit, because I kind of dogged them a little bit last week. But I do think when as someone who follows Georgia on the side, because a lot of my family, my wife is a Georgia fan, so I kind of keep up with them. They are a team that they play down to their competition at times. Yeah. They play up to their competition. But at the end of the day, I don't think Kentucky was – I think Kentucky got overhyped for beating a bad Florida team. When you look at the record, they literally have beat nobody. They beat Eastern Kentucky by 11 points. I think that game was extremely overhyped. And so now, I mean, they beat the brakes off them. So like, congratulations, Georgia. They still are the Georgia that we know, but I don't think Kentucky was really, you know, that's not better than beating LSU.
No, not at all. I think with that Georgia Kentucky game, you know, I think, you know, like you said, you know, Kentucky got overhyped after beating Florida. Kentucky went into that Georgia game. I don't know. They just forgot who they were versus who Georgia was. And I also think Georgia started hearing because of the previous struggle that they, you know, they struggled with Auburn. And then, of course, you know, South Carolina had a lead early in that game as well. Everybody starts saying, you know, this is not our normal Georgia. This is not the Georgia that of a couple years ago. They don't have the same level of talent. You know, Kasem Beck, you know, is he not the same level of quarterback as Stetson Bennett, all that stuff. I think Georgia took that personally. And you remember back in 2013 when all the trash was talked about Jameis and all that stuff. And then Florida State went in and just curb stomped somebody because they were angry about the national media and the conversation. Right. I think that's what we saw with Georgia. Georgia was kind of like lollygagging through the season where Georgia will win, whatever. And then everybody's like, well, Kentucky has a chance to upset them. And they're like, wait, what?
Yep.
And they literally just reminded the nation, we are Georgia, right?
Right.
And so I think that's what happened to them. But again, that's their best win on the season.
Yeah. Yep. Against a Kentucky team that shouldn't have been ranked. And
correct.
Kirby's a master motivator. And I think that's another thing that you see really rub off on him at with Dan Lanning in Oregon.
Yep.
You know, and that's the same thing that happened when they played Colorado. They heard the noise. They wanted to come out and prove a point. And they did. And so I do think Georgia is obviously they're still the team to beat. I mean, there's without a doubt. But I do think that there is, you know, I think that their schedule is so weak that it's going to be interesting when they get to the playoffs. Yeah. But they're still loaded. They still have so much talent. If they can ever just put it all together, I think that's still they're still the team to beat. But I have to give them a little bit of credit
and a little love.
When I talked about the rankings bias last week's episode, it wasn't I told you guys from the beginning, it was not a knock on Georgia as much as it was a knock on Florida State wasn't being treated the same as the way Georgia did in the rankings. So before we move on to Syracuse, I know we touched on it earlier. We got to take one more second to just relish in the pain that is Miami losing because, man, I love this. I absolutely love watching this. Every time I get to see Miami embarrassed for one reason or another, I absolutely love it. And I think the interesting thing about this, one thing that's funny is there were some people that were almost disappointed that they lost because they thought, oh, strength of schedule. And I'm like, first off, yeah, we keep it clean. We keep a G on the show. So, you know, FM, FFM. So, you know what that, if you know, you know. So I'm the type of guy, I hope Miami goes 0-12 year round every single year. But I think it's better. I don't really care about the strength of schedule because what's more important to me is they put a lot into that game. They had the little glow stick uniforms that I like to call them. They were
hideous, by the way.
Right. They looked terrible. They had at least maybe 150 people in the crowd, which is up from their normal thing. But most importantly, they had a house full of recruits. Watch that team get embarrassed. You see all the social media clips come out where the players are kind of questioning what they did towards the end.
Yep.
That is far more important other than just the 5 minutes of relishing in the pain of watching Miami, the three of them be sad together.
Right.
That to me is way more important than a little bit of strength of schedule bump. I think them just watching them lose because right now Florida State has the success. Napier, you know, they got a tough year this year. They're probably going to have a tough year next year with a strong strength of schedule. You might be getting that seat's getting hot. I don't think Cristobal is going anywhere because what they put to get him in there.
Yeah.
But if Florida State has a season, we think, and then Miami just keeps wetting the bed like that we know them to do, and Florida keeps having a bad season, this is huge for recruiting. And I think this is going to allow Florida State to put a chokehold in the state of Florida.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with your assessment there, Jesse, because like, here's the thing, like short term, you know, strength of schedule. Yeah, sure. Whatever. A little bump. We beat them. We get a little bump in the college football playoffs. But that's it. But here's the thing. This is what I think about. Let's say Miami was undefeated. We beat them, whatever. Now, kids are going to look at that and say, okay, Florida State, that might give them a slight edge in the recruiting. But then they get the idea that Miami's back because Miami's 11-1. I would rather Miami go 0-12, lose every game miserably, right? Recruits show up, and they're like, what are we doing at this dump of a program that can't get but 10 people to show up. And Florida State over here is kicking their tail, and they're winning, and they're cool, and they're at the IT program, right? Yeah. Miami could, I could care less about strength schedule with Miami. I'm thinking long term. I want that program to be buried. I want the NCAA to come out and say, listen, IBIS, whatever, you're a disaster for the world. You're a disaster for college football. You're done. It's over with. Let's get out of here.
Exactly. I wish it could be 45-3 every year. And now every I will say, like, it's fun that, like, I went to Miami, Florida State in 2013, and it was probably the most intense atmosphere I've been to at a college football game. It was great. And so, like, the games are fun when they're better, but I have no love for Miami. I have no love lost for them at all. If they go 0-12 every year, I'm just going to laugh it up. Like, when I saw them lose to Middle Tennessee State last year, like, I mean, I'm just over it immediately. I got to make some memes because we're going to enjoy it. We're going to celebrate this. It's almost as fun to me to celebrate a Miami loss as it is a Florida State win, just because, like, man, they only have like 10 fans, but they are just rabid. And it's like arguing with a brick wall. And that's probably an insult to a brick wall. But I enjoyed it because I think, like I said, right now it's a really pivotal time for Florida State. When you talk about the recruiting, they finally got some success. And now to me to see something like this, that is, you know, now you start shopping off their recruit list.
Absolutely. That's right. Well, I mean, you look at all the national programs. You look at when Bama was, when Nick Saban was kind of bringing Bama back, right? Auburn was kind of the program in the state with, I think, Tommy Tuberville and then, of course, you know, Cam Newton and those guys. And so when Bama was able to take that next step, when Georgia was able to take that next step, when Ohio State was taking that step, they took their rivals and they made them pay, not just on the field, but off the field. And now you're kind of seeing a reverse with Jim Harbaugh and Michigan kind of, you know, beating Ryan Day and Ohio State the last couple of times. There's now starting to overtake them, not just on the field, but off the field. And that's what sustains dynasties, right? You want to know why Florida State was able to do what no team has yet to repeat, not even Alabama, not Georgia, or anybody, was because Bobby understood that. Bobby knew that if Florida State were to stay on top, it had to dominate Miami and Florida on the field and off the field. Mike Norvell fully understands that. That's why he's more geeked up, more jacked up for rivalry games than he is any other game. He can lie to you and say Coach Speak and all games. No. He comes out and he says, Miami, Florida State, these are different. Because when you win on the field and when you win off the field, it sets you up long term.
Yep. And especially when you share a state that's so talent rich.
Yep.
And really the problem too is geography works against Florida State. So yeah, you're in the state, but you're not in really the prime part of the state. So to me, anytime that program is down, it allows you to go in there and take those recruits. Yep. And, you know, you just see some of the things that they make. And I've always, like I've said from the beginning, I think Cristobal is decent at recruiting. I don't think he's a good coach. I thought it was interesting to see Oregon fans pretty much celebrate when he left. Yep. They were happy about that. They talked about the offense being boring, how he has to interject in the game plan, the poor in-game decisions, which we saw last year when they lost to Texas A&M. Now you're seeing them this year. Yep. You know, you just – and I think, too, when you look at it, like, when he went to Oregon, I mean, he inherited Justin Herbert, for goodness sake, as quarterback. And so, like, when you look at the success that he had there, a lot of that had to do, he inherited a team that had a really good run before they had one or two bad seasons, and he had a chance to be on the staff beforehand. So I think, really, we're just kind of seeing that the true colors come out in Cristobal and just the coaching blunders. And I feel like Miami's put so much into getting him there and paying him. You know, obviously they paid him so much they couldn't finish building their IPF. So it's like, you know, so I think they're stuck with him for a little while. And
they are.
And, you know, I do feel like if they have success, it's not going to be good. So I feel like you want that. You want them to fail, because if you don't, then they could build something down there. So I think it was really good for Florida State to actually see them. And plus, I mean, who cares about Miami? Like I said, I want them to lose every game. I hope they lose. And, you know, the funny thing is now they have UNC and Clemson back to back. So they could put together a 3-game losing streak. And then how much fight do they have left when they roll into Tallahassee? Of course, it's a rivalry game. You know, they'll be up for it. But this is a team that we've seen quit.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, Jesse. It's like every year, Miami has been synonymous with having one of these, like, just, are you kidding? Cobra, you know, surrender Cobra game where you're just like, oh my gosh. And then they take a slide. I mean, it's typical. They take a slide. And so these next 2 weeks are pivotal for Miami. I mean, I don't know how they're going to beat North Carolina, and I definitely don't know how they're going to beat Clemson. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they could be rolling into Tallahassee on a 3-game losing streak. I mean, so we'll see. We'll see how that all kind of fleshes itself out.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching them going forward. And so we'll kind of move on towards the Syracuse game, because I know we're running a little bit long here. So I want to go ahead and get that in so we can get a good one preview for that game. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, I just think it was funny altogether. I know the knee thing was obviously, like, it was a complete blunder, and it was great to pick on and make fun of. They also let Georgia Tech drive the ball 74 yards down the field and score. Absolutely. On the last play, where it's like literally that last play, you just cannot let somebody get behind you.
No.
And
no.
That's exactly what they did. So it was just so funny to watch. And I honestly think the fact that they blew the call at the end almost makes it even funnier.
Well, I mean, the fact that they blew the call twice, right? Because if you look at it, the ball handler's down.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is. He was down, right? That's what makes it funny. What makes it hilarious is that the dude slid, right? And now everybody's on social media arguing about when the runner gives himself up, where is he down, whatever. Fact of the matter is he slid. He should have been probably marked down at the one, and they blew that call.
I just think it's funny. Like, every little stick you can shove in a Miami fan side is even more hilarious. And there were some other interesting games. Clemson struggled with Wake Forest at home. That's something, yeah. You know, Clemson still has turnover problems. The new kicker that we heard about for a half an hour during the last game missed another field goal. So that's just something to watch. I think Louisville is going to be the team, you know, right now between Louisville and North Carolina. Looks like we might have to go to some, like, old school Texas high school, flipping a coin in a diner at 2 a.m. to pick who's going to the ACC championship. Yes. So, like, we'll see how that goes. I know they got a lot of different things, and hopefully I'm hoping somebody loses so we don't have to worry about that. Cause it would be, like, you know, the 1 year that we actually get a chance to make it back, and then things go crazy. But there's still a lot of football left to be played. But, you know, Louisville looks pretty good first year under Jeff Brohm. They don't have a hard schedule, but the fact that they beat Notre Dame, and, you know, I still think Notre Dame's a little bit overrated, but I feel like they're a decent team. And now North Carolina, they got Tez Walker back. I think that's really going to be the team to beat in the ACC.
Yeah, for sure. I think with Louisville, they've not played a really hard schedule. Notre Dame is probably, it's their best win. It's their most decent win. You know, how you feel about Notre Dame probably determines that. You know, Louisville's always this just pest program, man. I remember when I was in high school, I think it was 2004, where, you know, we lost that rain-soaked game, you know, at Cardinal Stadium. You know, I was at the game when in 14, when Louisville was up a bazillion points, and then Florida State and Jameis Winston came back to win that game. I was also at the game when game day was there in Louisville, and, you know, we walked in thinking we were big and bad and number two team in the nation, and we got blown out with Lamar Jackson and 63, whatever the score was, 63-23 or something like that. I just do not like Louisville. They're always a pest on our side. And so it's actually been a little shocking to me how well they've played. They literally, think about this, they literally could be 11-0 when they face Kentucky at the end of the season. Like, that's just crazy for me to think about. Yeah. I also know that they play Miami. That's like their, I think that's their, their only other hardest game of the season that's left. And so, you know, I think that probably will give us a better look, because Miami does have a pretty decent defense this season. And so that'll give us a better kind of feel for them. They're going to be there for sure.
Yeah. And they do look really good, and they are a pest program. And I think on the flip side, while I think North Carolina is the better team, Mac Brown cannot beat Florida State. So, like, I think if you have to really, if it comes down to just a gut feeling type of game, I think you choose UNC all day long. I mean, they have really kind of got rolling.
Yeah.
But they also struggled against App State, who's not good this year. So I think that
again.
Right. So, like, I think that is something to watch too. So, Yeah, we'll have to see. And we'll talk a little bit about them in the Syracuse portion of the show, which we're getting ready to jump into now. So let's talk Florida State versus Syracuse. This is a game coming up Saturday, sold out again. You know, shout out to the Seminole Nation. Everybody's stepping up. Florida State right now leads the ACC in TV viewership. They are second in attendance. Of course, we know Clemson leads. They have a bigger stadium. They've sold out all but two home games. Of course, the ones not sold out are Southern Miss, which has already happened. Can't go back and do that. And then North Alabama, you know, that's going to be a hard game to sell out anyway. Right. But they've sold out almost every game. So Doak is back to rocking, back to a home field advantage. But when we talk about this game on Saturday, so Florida State versus Syracuse, you welcome them into Doak, like we said. Florida State's sitting at a 17.5 point favorite. Now, I feel pretty good about that. I think that's probably where the Virginia Tech one maybe should have been. Because, you know, we'll get into this. I feel like Syracuse is, they just do the same trajectory every year. They start out feasting on a bunch of nobody teams. And then when they hit the meat of their schedule, they just kind of fall apart. So the ESPN matchup predictor currently gives Florida State an 81.9% chance to win. Feels about right to me. The game is at noon on ABC. Of course, everybody knows noon kicks suck, but at least you can kind of get it out of the way early. You don't have to sit and wait all day. Florida State 13-2 all time against Syracuse. Syracuse are they're on a currently on a 3-game win streak against the Orange. Last game we know was 38-3 at Syracuse. And interesting enough, Syracuse has never won in Tallahassee. So we know they had a close call in 2021. So let's see if they can keep that going. Currently on a 2-game losing streak. And so, yeah, just some initial thoughts on Syracuse for me is going to be, and then I'll throw it to you. They feast on some really bad teams. When you talk about game one was against a 1-4 FCS team. Game two was against 2-4 Western Michigan. Game three was against a 2-4 Purdue. Game four was against a 2-3 Army team before they played Clemson and UNC. And the outcome of those games were completely different. So last year they started 6-0. Then they finished the season 1-6. And I think last year's Syracuse team, when you talk about they had Sean Tucker and the way they took Clemson to the wire, I think they were a better team last year. And you blew them out in their building. Now you get them at home. I don't particularly see this one being pretty close. But once again, we got another mobile quarterback that we on our hands that we got to deal with.
Yeah. Well, let me just throw some numbers at you that I was doing some research on. You know, as you said, first of all, this is the Dino Babers strategy, right? Because, I mean, let's just be real. This guy's not a great coach. And so he sets up all these cupcake gangs, right? Get everybody excited. You know, I imagine that the powers that be at Syracuse are like, okay, he's got them rolling again. They're 5-0. They're 6-0. And then they hit their tough schedule, and then it's back to, like, straight reality. And so I looked it up. I was curious of, like, how they've been doing against Power 5 schools, okay? So since Dino Babers has been at Syracuse, they've played 23 games against Power 5 schools, okay, in the years that he's been there. They've scored 493 points total in that game. That comes out to an average of 21 points scored against Power 5 teams. 21 points. They scored 21 points on average, right? They've been scored against 639 points. That's an average of giving up 28 points. They basically average a loss every Power 5 game. Now, they haven't lost all those games, but they average a loss on those games. Now, if you look at what they've done this season, the average score in their games, if you add all the scores up, is 30-18. So that's where I'm kind of living at, which kind of matches where the spread is, but I mean, they're just not very good often. Now, granted, they did go in and hand Clemson a loss a few years ago at Death Valley. But, you know, they'll have those aberrations. But, man, they're just not a good team against Power 5 schools.
Right. And I think that, like, I think when you talk about Syracuse, it's fair to acknowledge that that is a tough place to win. You are so distant from fertile recruiting grounds. You are so far out of touch that it's a hard place to win. And I really do think when you talk about Syracuse as a program, it's kind of one of those where it's like, let's make a bowl game. And that's pretty much we're doing good. And so I think they, like, Babers has a tough job, but they've not done well. And I mean, I think they've only had like two winning seasons since he's been there. They put together the one impressive season and then the one last year, which they just barely skated by. I think it was like 7-6. So, yeah, man, it's a hard place to win. And that's why I feel like last year when you saw they had an All-American running back, Sean Tucker, and what they've done with Garrett Trader has been impressive. I mean, he's developed as a quarterback. It's just a hard place to get talent. And one thing that he talked about at ACC Media Days was a lot of times the places like Syracuse, they start losing a lot of their depth players, some of the talented young guys that they are able to find. They're losing them to the portal because guys want to go have an opportunity. And at a place like Syracuse, where it's hard enough to get talent and then you start losing your depth, it just really puts you in a tough spot. And so I think Syracuse is just a hard place to acquire talent at a minimum. And then you have to hold on to it as well. So it's it's tough sledding up there. But when we talk about Syracuse in 2023, so in the S&P Plus rankings, which we know is opponent and pace of play adjusted, just a little more efficient way to measure a team. So Syracuse currently is ranked 41st overall. Florida State is sitting at 12th. The offense for Syracuse is at 46. Florida State's is also at 12th. So for everybody who thinks Florida State's offense is not good this year, they're still humming along at 12th and opponent adjusted. Defense, 43rd for Syracuse, 23rd for FSU. Again, top 25 in defense when you talk about opponent adjusted numbers. So Syracuse is 0-2 against S&P top 60 teams. So again, they just haven't played anybody. And we'll run through their schedule quick just to talk about a little bit of what they've done and why I feel like when you gauge Syracuse, you pretty much have to split it into two different seasons. You have to take the first four games and see what they did there. And then you have to look at North Carolina and Clemson kind of in their own subset, because to me, that is a lot more similar to what you're going to see in Tallahassee on Saturday as far as competition than what you saw against a team like Colgate or whatever. So game one, they did beat Colgate, like we mentioned, just an awful FCS team, 1-4 this year. They beat them 65-0. They racked up a ton of yards in that game, over 600 yards, really padded their stats. Cuse had three turnovers in that game, and they are a heavily penalized team, 7 penalties in that game as well. Just really shut Colgate down, but again, you beat nobody. They beat Western Michigan game two, 48-7. They're a 2-4 team, not that great there, put up a lot of yards on that one. They had 9 penalties again, so this is something we talked about in the Boston College game, and then we saw it come to fruition. Game three, they beat Purdue 35-20. That's not a terrible win, but you're talking about a Purdue team that's starting over with a new coach. Now, they did beat Virginia Tech. That's why I say that's not necessarily a terrible win. 9 penalties in that game, and Purdue had 4 turnovers. When you look at game four, they beat Army. A little bit of a struggle fest there, 29-16. Army's only 2-3. Again, 6 penalties. So now you get to the meat of the schedule. And this is where Syracuse always folds up like a cheap tent in a windstorm. So
I love it.
I try not to make too many dumb analogies, but it's fun. It's fun to kind of bring them out. But 31-14 against Clemson, which we know is a pretty evenly matched team to what Florida State does. Just the production numbers fell off a cliff in that game. Q still had 9 penalties, 3 turnovers. They allowed 5 sacks, only had 281 total yards. 281 total yards in that game. Completely different. Then game six, they back it up against UNC. 40-7 blowout loss. UNC, we know, is undefeated currently. They struggled. 129 passing, 92 on the ground. UNC put up over 600 yards on them. So just completely different story from the first four games to the last two. Again, 7 penalties and 2 turnovers in that one. Not the most disciplined team. So, like I said, I think when you look at what Florida State is as a team and what they bring to the table, I think you have to compare them more to – and I have some more stats we'll talk about in a minute. I think when you just kind of really have to break these two – their first 6 games apart and compare it more to what they did against North Carolina and Clemson.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't really judge Syracuse and think about their paralysis based on what they did in the first 4 games. I mean, you take out the Purdue, like I agree with you, that's a little different kind of win, Purdue starting over, new head coach, but they did beat Virginia Tech. And so that's like if you want to talk about levels, right? So Clemson, North Carolina, Purdue, and then everybody else, right? And Florida State is in that first tier. And I just do not see, as I watch the film against, you know, Clemson, as I watch the film against North Carolina, I just do not see a very competitive team. You know, they're going to try. And I'm sure we'll get into this. They're going to blitz the heck out of you on defense. And Schrader's going to run off, try to run all over the place. But if you if Florida State plays their B, maybe even C-plus level game, they still should win this going away.
Yeah, and I think there's the crowd that thinks Florida State's had some close games this year, so it has the potential to be close. And I really, if you can slow Schrader down, I think they're going to have a good day. I mean, like I said, I think you beat a better Syracuse team in a tougher environment when you talk about just a long trip in right. a dome that can be tricky to play in. I think you, you know, the way you blew them out last year, I don't think you're going to struggle with them this year. But we'll go ahead and talk about the offense, bring up Schrader. And this is what I talk about when you talk about providing, and everybody knows who watches this, I like to provide context because yeah. I can say, okay, Syracuse scores 33 points a game, tied for 41st. That's not terrible, 33 points a game. Versus Power 5, that number drops to 18.7 points per game. And correct. When you look at the last two games, it's even lower than that. That would have been 77th in the country. When you look at yards per play, Syracuse comes in at 6.09 yards per play. Not bad, averaging over 6 yards a play. They've only faced two top 50 defenses as far as yard per play metrics so far this season. That's Clemson and North Carolina. That 6.09 number drops down to 4.71 against Clemson and 5 yards of play against UNC. And we know Clemson has a better defense than UNC, of course. The success rate fell off a cliff in that game. Passing offense averaging 248 yards per game. Not too bad.
Nope.
Against Power 5, that number drops to 161 yards per game. So it falls off a cliff. So, again, it's just, you know, that when you talk about the level of competition that they played and you start extracting those FCS teams or those bad teams, which is not something Florida State has had the luxury of, the numbers really fall off a cliff and they tell a completely different story. And that's why, I mean, we've learned that Florida State can't take any games off. You have to show up ready to play or you'll find yourself in a dogfight. Maybe you don't win, but maybe you have – or maybe you don't lose, but you have an ugly win.
Yeah,
I just think this is the one where, like you said, even if they don't bring their A game, they're going to be fine. I mean, they've ran the ball pretty decent. Third down offense, they're averaging about 174 yards a game on the ground. Third down offense, 49.4%, 16th. So they've done well at converting. Red zone offense, 81.5%. Not great there, 79th in the country. Sacks allowed, they're giving up 2.7 sacks a game, 16 on the season, 109th. So you'll have a chance to pressure Schrader. Clemson got to him, I think it was 5 times in that game. So, we'll, like I said, the red zone defense is pretty decent. They're only allowing a score at 65%. But, again, you just got to look at – you have to look at these two games separately because when you talk about Syracuse, they scored on 2 of 14 drives against Clemson, 1 out of 11 drives against North Carolina. Combined, that they only scored on 3 of 25 drives in two games, which is – kind of unreal to think about. Yeah. And then I know we'll talk about the defense later, but UNC scored on 8 out of 10 drives. One was a fumble and the other one was a kneel down sequence. So they scored on basically every drive. So again, some of their numbers got padded early on. It looks good. But when you look at what they did against a higher level team that they're going to see on Saturday against Florida State, I feel like Florida State's going to have more similar numbers, if not better than what we saw in those last two games.
Yeah. And you know, what I would add to this is like, I think Florida State's – this is going to sound crazy, but hang with me here. I think if Florida State can make Syracuse offense into a passing offense,
yep.
It's going to be a long day for Syracuse because their bread and butter, just like Florida State's is the run game. I mean, they're running. They average 38.6 attempts per game, right? So they're trying to run the ball. That's combined with, you know, all the jets, all the QB calls, the mesh point, all those different things. Like they're trying to run the ball, but they're not very great. I mean, Schrader on the season, he's only 64% completion. He's got 8 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. So yep. They're really trying not to throw the ball as much. And if they're going to throw the ball, you know, it's going to be those little short, you know, behind the line of scrimmages or those little 5-yard dinks. They're not really throwing a lot of deep shots down the field as well, too. So if Florida State can actually turn that offense into a passing offense, that's actually a good thing. And here's another interesting thing I realized in the film study of the last couple games. In their losses, Schrader is actually running more than when they've won. So this might actually, this is going to sound crazy, guys. I know I sound like a lunatic right now. This actually might be the game where you want him running, yeah. Right? because that means then we're actually getting penetration in the backfield. We're blowing up the offensive line. We're jamming the receiver so they're not getting clean releases. And so he's feeling like he's got to tuck and run the ball. And the reason why I say that is because if he's tucking and running the ball, I actually have great confidence, maybe not so much in our overall defense of guarding the mobile quarterback, but I have confidence in our front four that we can get penetration, we keep containment, and then it's not left to our linebackers to try to fill when he gets out. Now, they need to play sound gap defense, but I think if we can turn him into a runner and forcing the pass, we'll – it'll be a long day for that offense.
Right. And I do agree, because I think you also have some linebackers and the defense as a whole for Florida State that will make you pay for running the ball.
Yes.
And I, you know, this is purely assumption here, but I do know, like, he took a shot in that Clemson game. I know it was initially targeting and then they overturned it. And he really, maybe he just hasn't been the same since, but I mean, he got obliterated against Clemson, and that's something to watch too. But I do think you bring up a good point. They already lost Gadsden, who was their best receiver slash tight end. He was a hybrid guy, you know, predicted to be, I voted pretty high for him to be like an all ACC type player in the preseason. He was a really talented player. So you lose him, you lose one of your best targets. And like you said, I think you want to make them one-dimensional. This is something that we said last week with Virginia Tech. You want to make Kyron Drones have to throw the ball to beat you.
Right.
And like you said, when you talk about he only has 8 touchdowns on the season, well, here's the interesting thing. This is another thing that I did when I was writing the pregame article. 4 of those came against Colgate. So that means he's only thrown for 4 touchdowns in the rest of all the games. So it's not like he's lighting it up through the air. You know, they threw for a lot of yards in that game, and he's thrown an interception in every single game except for the Western Michigan game, I believe it was. Mm. So he's had a turnover in every single game. Now, he runs the ball pretty well. You know, he's a big guy. He's a load to bring down, so you're going to have to be disciplined, which, you know, does make you a little bit nervous because missed tackles have been an issue for us.
Right.
But I think you do have to, like you said, you have to be gap sound in this one. You have to be very disciplined, because when you look at his scramble yards so far in the season, now these are sack-adjusted yards, he has 224 scramble yards and 203 designed run yards, which was the complete opposite of what we saw for Kyron Drones last week, where he's more of a design run type guy. So this is one where the protection will break down and he will take off. So you do have to play discipline. He's averaging 6.8 yards per attempt on the ground. So he is a good runner, 6 rushing touchdowns so far this year, 29 missed tackles for. So he's, like I said, he's a hard dude to bring down. Now, that number drops to 4.1 yards per attempt and 0 touchdowns against UNC and Clemson. So the better defenses did keep him in check. When you talk about his big-time throw rate is at 5.4%, that's pretty low. Turnover-worthy play rate at 5.3 is pretty high. So there are going to be some opportunities here to get some pressure on him. I believe his pressure-to-sack ratio is currently at 24.6%. So if you can get back there, you can get him on the ground. If you wrap up, you grab cloth, you make sure you get him down, I think they're going to have a really good day against this offense. We know they only gave up 3 points last year. It just, like you said, if you make them one-dimensional – look, Schrader was, I believe he was like the worst graded, worst QBR, worst, you name it, what stat you want to use. He was the worst quarterback in the ACC 2 years ago when he put up all those rushing yards against Florida State. He's come a long way. Like, I tip of the cap to him. He's become a lot better quarterback. He's just not a guy that you fear like a Jaden Daniels or something that you've seen. I think you've seen a lot better quarterbacks. So like you said, I think you want to make him throw the ball. And if he's running it, you're probably having a good day, because they're not going to be able to catch up. If Florida State gets, say, a 2-3 score lead, you're not going to catch up with running, you know, quarterback scrambles or quarterback drop.
Yeah, exactly. You're just not. No. Well, you're not. And I mean, the thing is, you know, he's averaging about 61 yards a game, but you know, everyone will look at his rushing total and be like, oh no, mobile quarterback. But let's just be real. He got 195 of those yards on 25 rush against Purdue. 4 of his touchdowns, 4 of his 6 touchdowns came against Purdue. So again, right, I love how you talked about, like, we have to put these things in context, right? And so against Clemson, he had 15 rushes. 15. That's a lot for a quarterback, right? But he only had 24 yards, right? Against UNC, he had 10 rushes, but he only had 28 yards. So, like, the better defenses, as you just said, are really holding out. Where Florida State could get in trouble. Now, one of the things that Florida State has been really good this year, actually, outside of the quarterback scrambling, is containing the running backs, right? Florida State has really shut down running backs. And you have a decent running back that's coming up. I mean, he's Allen, their running back at Syracuse. He averages about 15 touches a game, about 66 yards a game. He's got 7 total TDs, 5 rush, 2 passes. He will come out of the backfield. I mean, he has 20 catches on the season out of the backfield. He's got 141 yards, but he's a little scat. He can get out there if you lose containment. He's averaging about 3.3 yards a game. And so we have to make sure that we communicate on defense, right? If we communicate on defense, we play gap sound defense. And I expect, based on the adjustments I saw against Virginia Tech, that Adam Fuller will be aggressive. I don't mean blitzing all the time. I just mean we're going to be up on those receivers. We're going to make them one-dimensional because we trust our front four to shut down the running game. And so I think, I'm normally not super confident in any game. This one makes me really confident.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you bring up a good point. When I watched Allen at running back, he's quick. He's got some speed. So like if you let him get in space, he can turn a 2-yard gain into a 20-yard gain like that.
Correct.
So you got to watch him there. And he does come out of the backfield with the pass game, but he's, again, you're talking about a guy who's trying to fill in for Sean Tucker, right? And Florida State did a good job bottling him up last year. 4.61 yards per carry, not the greatest, but when you look at the last two or a Power Five teams, that number drops to 4.01 yards per carry. Mm. So again, like you said, Florida State's done a really, really good job of bottling up backs this year. And I know LSU's kind of hit or miss, but you also had Pat Garwo at BC, who was a former 1,000-yard rusher. You faced, I call him the Dollar General, Christian McCaffrey and Will Shipley.
Oh, gosh.
So, like, and you bottled him up. Tootin last week for Virginia Tech. That's a – man, he's good. Like, that was was a diamond in the rough find for Virginia Tech there from North Carolina A&T. And they did a really good job at bottling up all those guys. It's just the quarterbacks that you've had. Yep. Trouble, but everybody has trouble because it adds an extra player that you have to defend. Correct. So I think in this one, I do also I would love to not have a mobile quarterback for just one game, but
a statue would be great.
Right. But I think that you've had an opportunity now where you face so many of them. It's like almost rinse and repeat with your game plan because you know what to expect out of there. And when you talk about making them throw, I don't really think Syracuse has that dominant wide receiver. When you talk about Virginia Tech, you held them to 104 yards passing.
Yeah.
They didn't allow, I think the secondary had a really great game. I think the defense had a really great game. You didn't allow one single pass completion over 10 yards, according to PFF. So I think you did really, really good in that game with your secondary. And I think some of those receivers, when you talk about Jalen Lane and some of the guys at Virginia Tech, I think those guys are pretty decent. I think they're better than what Syracuse has. So I think that game was big for getting confidence for your secondary. You saw Akeem Dent come back in that game, which means you would assume he would be available for at least most of the game this time around.
Correct.
And I really just think that veteran presence in the secondary has been missed. And man, I'll tell you what, now side note here, I think Conrad Hussey, it's time to get him in the conversation because he's a dude. Like that hit, he might be one of the next really good DBs to come out of Florida State.
Oh, man. It was just a perfect hit. He read, if you go back and watch the film, they talk about reaction time, right? You see the play, you go after. You don't think, you don't overthink it. And the moment he turns, to make that behind the line of scrimmage, that little flat throw, the moment he turns, you see Hussey literally just beeline it. The recognition on that play. And then, of course, the hit was just textbook. I mean, it was a beautiful hit. So, he definitely has the makings of being one of our top DBs to come out of this program, for sure. Now, I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but he definitely has that.
Yeah, and when you talk about a secondary that has him and Azaria Thomas in it, like the young guys that are coming up, that is something to be really excited about. And I will say that when you talk about the younger guys, I do think when we get to the score prediction part of this game, because of the way we think things are going to go, I do think you're going to have garbage time in this game. I think that the score may not look like what it could, because I think they are now trying to develop some of that depth for the course of the season.
Right.
When you talk about, like, and we'll touch on this real quick. When you talk about a guy like Winston Wright, is no longer with the team. A lot of that we assume, you know, not to make any judgment on anybody, because I wish him the best of luck wherever he ends up. It's probably over frustration over targets. And so now you lose that depth. So you just want to keep building up those young guys. You know, you want to get Destin Hill involved. You want to get a lot of these guys some experience, because you know it's a long season and you're going to need them. And I think that this is the opportunities where last week people were frustrated that maybe you don't play some of the younger guys. But I think you're just trying to prepare for a long season. You're trying to build that depth. And I think that's going to be something you're going to see in this game as well once we get into garbage time.
Yeah, and, you know, with Winston, right, I mean, everybody's been young. You know, everybody's been young. Everybody wants to succeed. You know, we talk about these, we talk about Florida State because we're fans, right? But these are kids actually playing it. And I know Mike Norvell, he actually even came out and said how much he loves Winston Wright. Like, he'll always be a big fan of this corner. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, these student athletes, they have to make the best decision for them. And, you know, have we been frustrated that we haven't seen a lot of the slot receivers being used? Yeah, of course. Sure. We could find that. You can go back and watch the film. LSU, Boston College, you know, all the games where you see these guys kind of somewhat running wide open and you're like, why isn't Jordan Travis hitting them? And Winston Wright's one of those guys.
Yep.
At the end of the day, he made a decision for him. And listen, once a Noel, always a Noel. We'll love that guy. We'll support him wherever he goes, as long as it's not to the two schools we don't like and he doesn't play against us in a potential national championship game. But I think with the young guys coming up, man, Mike and the staff have done an incredible job of recruiting, but also, you know, not just recruiting, because in this day and age, it's not just high school recruiting. It's both high school and portal recruiting. I'm excited for the future of Florida State. I think we got some really great guys that are coming up. I'm excited about the offense. I'm excited about the quarterback room, running back room, wide receivers. I think offensive line, we're still, I mean, you know, Alex Atkins, can we pay that man $1 billion to not leave?
Whatever it takes. Please,
whatever it takes. Like, I'm really excited for that side of the ball. I think for a long time, Florida State's going to be taking really good care of that. And, you know, we need to stop hating on Adam Fuller. Let's just throw this in there. I know we'll get to the defense. We need to stop hating on Adam Fuller. This is a different age to coach defenses and coordinate defenses in. And the dude is doing a pretty good job. Yes, he has his blunders, but... And I say that because I think the talent that we're recruiting in the defense, oh my goodness, I'm so excited about.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I think you just see the future coming, and it makes you excited. I know he doesn't always have his bright spots, but I think overall, Adam Fuller, he is a better defensive coordinator than people like to think. It's just, it's a different game now. You don't see the 17-7 type games anymore. Teams just score points. It is what it is. Right. Even some of the best, you know, when you talk about even like, look at Georgia and whatnot, you know, they're giving up 20 points here and 20 something points there to teams. And that's one of the best defenses in the country. Yeah. So it is what it is. And like with Winston Wright, I do think there were some emotions that went into that. Of course, like you said, we were all young at one point. But you also look at, he had only played in 4 games this season. So if he leaves now, he preserves that year of eligibility. So, you know, no harm, no foul there. I just think that it's unfortunate, but like you said, you just wish him the best. As long as he doesn't end up at one of the other two in-state schools, we'll be cool with that. So just wanted to touch on that because it is a little bit of news. But now we'll talk a little bit about the Syracuse defense here and what we think Florida State can do against them. So scoring defense on the year, not too bad for Syracuse. 19 points per game allowed, tied for 31st. Yards per play allowed is 4.79, which is 23rd. So their defense is good. They play an aggressive style of defense. Of course, now when you talk about they allow 19 points per game, we know Clemson put up 31 on them. UNC put up 40 on them. So again, you're talking about you finally played an offense with a pulse and they made you pay for that. So when you talk about they've only played, keep in mind, yards per play is at 4.79 allowed. They've only played one team with a top 60 offense, because Clemson has an elite defense still, but their offense is, it's okay. It's not great by any means. But UNC, we know, is a very offensive-led team. So now that's the only team they played in the top 60. And in yards per play in that one, they allowed 6.32 yards per play compared to 4.79. So you can see once they played somebody with talent, they put up 40 points. They moved the ball on them. Passing defense right now comes in allowing 241 yards per game, tied for 88th. Not great there by any means. Rushing defense, 114 yards a game, 34th in the country. Not bad. Third down defense, 39%, 71st. Red zone defense, pretty good actually, 65%, tied for 11th. Sacks per game, 18 sacks on the year, 3 sacks a game. tied for 14th. Now, before I kick it to you, because I know you got some numbers to talk about pressure and the way they blitz, I will say the one thing about when you talk about their sacks and how aggressive they play, they did sack Drake May two times in that game against UNC. Yep. But UNC does allow an average of 2.2 sacks per game. He's been sacked at least twice in every game except for the South Carolina game. And Pitt, who is a train wreck this year, got him five times last week. So Syracuse has been good at producing sacks, but I think when you look at against the better teams, it's not like they stood out above the rest of what they were able to do. So I think Florida State, knowing that, you know, Drake May's a mobile guy, Jordan Travis is a mobile guy, even though sometimes, you know, he's a little reluctant to move. Yeah. He's really good at evading pressure, even if he doesn't like to run the ball. I think you're going to be fine in this one. But I know you got some thoughts on this defense. So share, go ahead and share that with me.
Yeah. No, the thing that really just kind of jumped off the page to me, like I don't think Florida State's offense should have a huge problem with this defense. I think they should score, and they should score at will. Let's just put it out there. They should score, and they should score at will. But it is a thing to understand, and I'm sure Mike Norvell and Alex Atkins are looking at this. Syracuse thrives on chaos. They thrive on it. That's their whole defense. They will blitz you till you're blue in the face. I mean, just looking at the blitz rate against North Carolina, they blitzed on 51.7. So basically 52% of UNC's offensive possessions plays, Syracuse brought five or more against him. Against Clemson, they blitzed 43.2% of the time. Now, what's interesting is at that Clemson game, that only of those 43% of the time, only 25% actually got pressure on Kubnik. So they're not necessarily always getting home or causing erratic throws or turnovers, man, but they just blitz you. They run like this bare five front. Sometimes they'll go three down and they'll have the D or linebacker, you know, the jack guy kind of stand up there, but they will blitz you from all different angles. And so, you know, we just need to make sure that we're communicating really well. Obviously the game's at home, it's at noon, so obviously the crowd will be very helpful in that. But they're gonna, Florida State, and I know because they did the same thing. I watched the game from last season as well. Mike Norvell had and Alex Atkins had an incredible plan, especially with the offensive line, of those exotic blitzes that they're going to see there. But that 52% blitz rate was just like, because they know if they don't get pressured, they're going to get lit up against Power Five schools. So it makes sense that that's their strategy. I mean, their defensive coordinator, I don't know what his name is, but that's his MO. I went back and looked at a couple other things from his other times, and that's just who he is. He coach a basically a high risk, high reward attacking style defense. He knows that he's going to give up some big stuff, but he's banking on the fact that he's going to get home more than he is going to give up. Problem is, against UNC and Clemson, he has given up way more than he's gotten home.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, because I was thinking in my mind while I was listening to your numbers is that I really do think running that style of defense, that's so you can hide a mismatch in talent. You know, when you can't match up, you have to change the game somehow in your favor. And that can be through pressure, through just an aggressive style of defense. And that's something that I even brought up when you talk about Florida's defensive coordinator, the Austin Armstrong guy. He did that at Southern Miss. They were extremely aggressive. They were top 10 in basically every tackle for loss and sacks and takeaways and all that stuff, but they were terrible at giving up the explosive play because, like you said, it's a very high risk, high reward type of defense. And you talk about Florida State, a team that's been historically in the last few years under Mike Norvell, very good at creating explosive plays. So if you don't get home, they're going to eat your lunch. And you know, you can talk about what they did against North Carolina is a pretty good comparison here when you talk about talent wise, because Drake May's an NFL quarterback. They have some really talented receivers over there. You know, I think that's going to be your most comparable type of when you talk about what the offense will be able to do against that defense. And when you look at them getting 40 points, that's about where I have this game ending up, with Florida State getting around 40 points. Yeah. But like I said, I do think when you talk about garbage time, you may not see it be as bad as what it is, or what it could be, but I do think that Florida State should have a pretty good day against this defense. As long as they can protect Jordan Travis, you don't want to let him take any unnecessary shots. But the offensive line has been really good at pass blocking this year. And if you're if you got Robert Scott back, you can move some guys around to get your best five up front. I think you're going to have a good day. And I think you're going to, you know, hopefully the tweet that he sent after the game was foreshadowing that Johnny Wilson is okay. Could you probably win without him? Probably. I mean, you still got Darian Williamson, a guy that I'm excited about that we just haven't seen much of. But I think when you talk about any team, really any team that has to go against this receiving core, it's just a it's a huge jump up in competition, and I don't think teams are really ready for that. So I think Florida State can have a really successful day on offense against this defense. And like, I mean, like I said, they had a great game plan last year, and I think it'll be the same case this year.
Yeah, I mean, like, and so, you know, I love how earlier as you talked about, like, we have to put these games in context, right? The crappy teams that they played versus, like, the actual true Power Five, like, good teams. But every team has a thread that you can kind of see throughout, right? That you're like, even crappy versus good, you see this thread. And this is the thread. They're 87th in the nation in pass defense. 87th. So that's all those crappy teams. That's Colgate. That's Western Michigan. That's even Army that doesn't really throw the ball very much. That's Clemson. That's UNC. That's Purdue. They're 87th in the nation in pass defense, right? So they're giving up about 241 yards a game. Clemson scored. Clemson had 263 yards against them as well. And so you look at that and you're kind of like, yeah, if we hold up on the offensive line, Jordan Travis should feast. The receivers should feast this Saturday. Now, with as far as Johnny Wilson is, if Mike Norvell holds to his MO, if he's all right, I'm actually under the opinion that he probably doesn't play because he doesn't really need him in this game. That's just what I've typically seen. Now, Johnny could be like, no, I want to play. I'm good. I'm ready to go. That'd be great. But I actually think if he doesn't play, that's okay. Give him a week to kind of heal up whatever that, you know, the injury was there. But yeah, Jordan should feast. The receivers should feast. The running backs out of the backfield catching the balls. I mean, they should feast. This is a terrible pass defense. You know, they're pretty decent against the run. They're only giving up 114 yards. Clemson only scored or only rushed for 126 yards against them. So, yeah, the run game might be a little slow going early on. But if Mike Norvell does what he typically does in those types of games, usually when a team comes in really gunning for the run, he'll use the pass to set up later, built by storm. I mean, that's that whole mentality, right? Where if you're going to try to stop us early from running, we're going to throw all over you. Then you're going to open back up, and then we're going to jam it down your throat with the run game. So I feel like that's probably what you'll see early is maybe a lot of passing early to set up the run later on. They should feast.
Yeah, and I agree because one point that I was making in the article that I'm writing is I don't think that just because what you saw them do Saturday where they ran all over a terrible rushing defense, I don't think that means the run game is just back. Like, I don't think they're going to just break off 200 every week now because they ran all over Virginia Tech who can't stop anybody on the ground. But I do think that it gives you some confidence going forward. I think you should be able to do better than you did against Clemson, where you had 22 yards on the ground. We saw Jordan willing to run the ball a little bit more Saturday, and I think that really opens things up. But like you said, we also know that they won't completely abandon the run because they just don't. They're going to try. But if they need to lean on the pass, they're not scared to do so either. And like you said, you talk about Western Michigan threw for 221 on them. Purdue threw for 323 on them. I just really feel like when you talk about what this passing game brings into things, and you know, we saw a good game from Kyle Morlock last week, Destin Hill got involved. So you're starting to see a few more of the targets get spread around here. And I just feel like you said, they should be able to throw all over them. The good thing is about Florida State's offense is if the run game, and this is something that we saw last week, if the run game is there, they're going to feed it and it's going to work and they can win running the ball. If they can't run the ball, they'll throw it, and they can do that successfully. So it's kind of like a pick-your-poison type of offense where you really have to come into that game, and you kind of have to pick one or the other because you can't really stop both. And I think teams have tried to stop the run this year because they know – I mean, you can't win one-on-ones against Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson. You just can't. So you have to pick one or the other, and I think that Florida State has enough options on either side of the ball that they'll be able to move the ball pretty much at will in this game.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is this, the last 2 years under Mike Norvell, okay, Florida State has rushed for, in 2021, they rushed for 247 yards against Syracuse. In 2022, 230 yards. I mean, Mike wants to run the ball against Syracuse. Yep. Like he has found whatever the defensive coordinator is doing. Mike knows I'm going to jam this ball down your throat and you come and stop us. I mean, you go back to that 21 game where in Doak where they won on the field goal. I mean, even then, even when Syracuse went up, like he just still was running the ball because right. He knew they cannot stop this. So I actually have a lot of confidence that the run game will look maybe not as explosive as it was at Virginia Tech, which was those two big runs by Trey Benson, but it's going to look dynamic. I mean, they're going to get large chunks of yards throughout the day. And I'm excited to see it. I'll be there this weekend. I decided to go, so I'm going to be there. But I think it's going to be feasting there. I don't think there'll be much famine.
Yeah, and I do think Trey will get going. I think that game was big for his confidence. I actually saw somebody tagged me in something on Twitter right before we jumped on where he was the third fastest player clocked this weekend at 22.1 miles an hour. Oh my God. A guy with that size and that speed combination. It should
not be possible.
It shouldn't. It really shouldn't. And if he can – I think people do forget, too, that Trey's relatively young to the game of college football. Last year was his first year – as really a whole season coming off that bad injury. So he's still finding himself as a back. And I think the confidence is big for him. You know, now he is the lead back. He's not behind Trayshawn Ward. So maybe he's trying a little bit too hard when you talk about the dancing that he was doing. So I think he's going to get right as the season goes. You know, you just talk about some of the defenses they've had to play so far, but yeah, I'm excited about this one. I will be watching from home. I did my ticket giveaway for this game, so I gave it to somebody. So hopefully they enjoy the game. I know they're extremely excited about it. And, you know, we got another one coming next week. The Duke game going to be a night game. That one's exciting too. So, you know, I know the noon games are unfortunate, but I think it's fun sometimes to get the beating out of the way early. So you don't have to sit around and wait all day. But as we get ready to put a bow on this one, for me, I'll give a couple keys to the game. I'll let you give a couple keys to the game, and then we'll make a score prediction. So, to me, obviously, I think this one, like we talked about, I think you really want to make them one-dimensional. You want to make them run the ball. I mean, throw the ball on you, because I don't think they can win that way. I don't think they're good enough of a pass offense to do that. I think you do need to try and control Schrader to a little bit early on. I think you are okay with him being the primary runner of the ball whenever they're down, when they can't catch up. I don't think you want to let him do enough to keep them in the game, keep the chains moving, keep your offense off the field. So containing Schrader will be big. And then I think really more than anything, I just want to see Florida State play a complete game for four quarters, come out, punch Syracuse in the mouth, and get it over with like they did last year. You know, that was the one where it's like, okay, well, they kept it close against Clemson. We'll see. Florida State's got a long trip all the way up to play in a dome where it's hard to play. And they came out and it was like, it's over. Like, they just ended the game, kill shot early. I think that would be nice. We saw that run early in Virginia Tech, 22-0 in the first quarter. I think if you jump out on them early, I just think Syracuse is going to lay down if you get a big lead. So I think if Florida State can control Schrader to a degree and then just keep their foot on the gas, limit the mistakes, let them make the mistakes. Like we said, Schrader's throwing a pick in every game. They have had like 6 to 9 penalties in every single game. Let them make the mistakes. You're at home. You've got the home field advantage. And so I'm looking for Florida State to come out and really just impose their will this week. So give me some keys to the game, what you think Florida State needs to do to come away with a victory in this one.
Well, I'm going to start right there with – I'm going to start with your special teams. Let's not give up the kickoff, okay? Yes. Whatever that Virginia – I know Mike talked about the leverage or whatever it was. Let's get that fixed, okay? Because that kind of stuff lets teams like this stay in the game or get momentum in the game. So let's make sure our special teams is going well. I think on offense, again, run the ball. Mike Norvell likes to script – like the first, I think, 15 to 20 plays in the first quarter. And he likes to script them in again in the second half and the third quarter. Hey, Mike, can we strip the second quarter too? Can we get some scripted plays in the second quarter? Because here's the thing. When the team is focused in that way, when they know what they're focused on and what they're doing, they're literally an unstoppable offense. So I think just a focus on the run game, that we jam it down their throats, that we take what the defense gives us, as Mike's been saying, we take what the defense gives us. I thought Jordan Travis did a better job of that in that Virginia Tech game when he hit, you know, that was a beautiful throw to Destiny Hill there that I thought was really good. He hit some of the underneath routes. Take what the defense gives him. Try not to be superhero, right? Try not to be superhero. And then on the defense, man, just make them one-dimensional. Make them a throwing team, okay? Make them a throwing team. Hopefully the offense gets out ahead, and then you can just attack, attack, attack. I'm not talking about blitzing all the time. I'm just get up on their receivers, get up on that line, shut that run game down. If they do that, if they do those three, four keys, I am very confident that we will be leaving Doak Campbell Stadium happy at 6-0.
I definitely agree with you there. And I think it's their game to lose. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think this is one that they can come in, they can win handily. You just don't want another like Boston College situation. I think that game, again, I think it was anomaly. I think it's behind us. I think they'll be fine in this one. So again, when we talk about score prediction, I do think that you have to look at the way the new clock rules and things figure in. I think they're just, you're not going to see as many really points anymore because
yeah.
I saw something that came out the other day where it's an average of two drives per game that yep. each team loses. So when you're talking about losing two drives, that's potential for 14 points. Yep. That is something to keep in mind. I also think when you talk about garbage time in this game, which I do think if Florida State can have another fast start, not allow them to claw back in the second quarter. I think Jordan Travis should have a baseball cap on around the mid-third quarter, something like in this one. So I do think that brings your score total down just a little bit when you talk about getting some backups. And we know Florida State does kind of give up some yards and points and garbage time. But overall, I think they're going to have a successful day in this one. I have Florida State winning this game 38-17. I know we're pretty close on our score prediction here.
Yeah.
I got them 38-17, and I know people are going to say, well, that's the same you scored last year. You know, but Florida State, like I said, you just kind of have to understand this is what this team is. It's going to be a little clunky at times. But I think, again, now you're starting to see them get a couple games against teams that aren't as good. So now they have some chance to work on things. You may see things click a little bit better now that they're not really having to leave in all their starters all the time against tough defenses. And so I think Florida State, they will get some backups in this game. I think they will have a successful day. And I got the Noles taking it 38-17.
Yeah. Isn't it funny, just real quick before I give my score prediction, how, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, 38-17 was like, man, that was a beatdown. Now it's like, ooh, that was a close game. It's like, wait, what? What happened?
It is crazy how it's changed. Like we talked about, if you don't win by 40 points, it was a close call. And like that's not really, man. I mean, I wouldn't call a 14-point game a blowout, but really, you know, when you get past 20 points, I mean, that's a thorough beating.
Yeah, for sure. Well, very similar to you, man. I'm very confident. Let me just give you a couple of these things. FSU, Florida State University, the greatest college football program in the nation, is 101-6 versus unranked opponents as a top five team lifetime. 101-6. After Saturday, they're going to be 102-6 versus unranked opponents as a top five team. This is the 19th time that Florida State has been 5-0. They're about to be 6-0. Again, because of what you said, Jesse, I totally take into account that, you know, we're getting two less offensive possessions per game, 14 less points per game with the new timing rules. The way the offense has kind of been playing, it's building. And then you just have to. I know we don't like to talk about this because they're terrible, but you just have to account for this, the always crappy call officiating, right? That's what the ACC is. And they're good for at least a score or two. So I have the Noles winning 35-17.
I'll take it. Because, you know, again, I think this is one where not, you just get the win and you work on some things. And because it's a long season and you got a really big one coming up next week. We'll see if Riley Leonard is even available in that game, let alone at 100%. But we'll be back to preview that one again next week. But yeah, man, I just think you really have to enjoy each week in its own. And just every time they get a win, you just have to just enjoy it because, you know, look at talking about, you're getting a cheer for a team that's top four in the country. That's 5-0, right, looking to go 6-0, still in the driver's seat for every goal they want to accomplish, whether it be an ACC championship, a playoff berth or everything like that. They're still in control of their own destiny. And, you know, after so long where Florida State was pretty much out of the national picture by October,
Yeah.
You know, you got some winnable games coming up. You should be favored in every game the rest of the season. You got some of your tougher games at home.
Yeah.
I feel really good about it. And this is just, I'm interested to see this game. I really am, because now you've had the bye week. You've won pretty good over Virginia Tech. You know, like we said, yeah, it could have been worse, but I think it was still a very satisfactory win. Now you're starting to see them play those mid-tier teams, and I want to see them if they can do what they did last year when they come out of the bye and they just really kind of wipe the floor with some of these teams. I don't expect it to really be what it was. You know, I don't expect 56-6. I don't.
Right.
Do I think it can happen? 100%.
Yes.
100%. I think they could beat this team 48-10 if they really wanted.
Do we hope it happens? Yes.
100%. Like, if they stay on the gas and they keep their foot on their throat, I think they could really run away with this one. But again, I just think, you also, knowing it's a long season, once the game's in hand, you get the guys out that need, you don't need to overplay people in games like these, because you don't want cheap shots and things like that.
Right.
You have bigger things on your mind than beating Syracuse by 40 instead of 30. So I do think that will be something to take into account. Mike Norvell knows they need some style points. So I do think I do think you want to win this one comfortably, cover the spread, whatnot. You know, that doesn't really matter to me, but just get the win, be comfortable, and enjoy a sold out Doak Campbell Stadium on a nice Saturday.
That's right. Let's go.
Well, guys, I think we're going to go ahead and probably call it here. I know we ran a little bit longer than we had planned on, but, you know, I think me and Michael, we're so excited to be talking about Florida State.
Yes.
And, you know, as we grow and develop our chemistry together talking about Florida State, I think you guys are really going to enjoy what we're going to bring to the table as far as coverage goes. Like I said, we're going to be back next week to talk about that Duke game. That's going to be a really highly anticipated game. They get NC State this weekend. So if they can win that game, they will be coming in as a ranked team against Florida State. That's going to be a huge matchup. Who knows? Maybe a game day game. I don't know what's on the docket outside of that in case there's a bigger game. So, going to be a fun Saturday. I can't wait to watch the Noles play this weekend. So, with that being said, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Michael, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, just appreciate it. All of you Plant the Spear fans, man, continue to like and share our stuff as well. Thank you, Jesse. And I'm just excited. I'm excited to see the progression of this team. I think it's another step of the climb, right, to use Mike Norvell's phrasing there. And I'm excited, man. We win this weekend and we continue the climb towards a really, really special season.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. And like you said, you guys, if you could just like and subscribe to the channel to stay connected for all the coverage that we're going to bring you guys going forward. Also, check out plantthespear.com, our website, where we're going to be posting all kinds of articles, stories. There's links to socials and everything there. Everything you need that's kind of our home base. So get in the conversation. Join us on social media. I'm extremely active on Twitter. I love to mix it up with the fans. Michael will be there too. We have a Facebook group as well. So, you know, get in on the conversation. That's the thing. We really want to be intertwined with our audience. We really want to make it feel like a family atmosphere. Like, everybody has a voice in the conversation. That's always been the goal at Plant the Spear. And I feel like Michael's only going to help elevate that to the next level. So again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for support. And as always, go Noles. We'll be right back.